Well, I think Apple's iPhones have kind of anchored the whole phone thing, haven't they? Like, before Apple came along, you know, what would you pay for a phone? Like, you know, $100, maybe less. And then, you know, they kind of shifted everyone's frame of reference so that, like, a phone is now something you pay, like, you know, around $1,000 rather than around $100. Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Get ready for another exciting conversation on the VWO podcast. Our guest for this episode is researcher and professor of psychology, Ben Ambridge. Join us as we take a closer look at optimizing user experience with the help of psychological intelligence. In this episode, Professor Ambridge talks about the top psychological principles and shares how you can leverage them to optimize your website or app. But wait, this episode isn't like your regular podcast. It's a unique webinar turned video podcast, and it is delivered to you in the form of an exclusive masterclass. So don't forget to hit that follow button and join us as we speak to leading industry experts about some amazing stuff that can help you drive growth and achieve long-term success. Without any further delay, let's jump right into this conversation with Professor Ambridge and learn more about psychological intelligence.
So the first finding that I want to tell you about is delay discounting. So it's lunchtime here in the UK. Most of us have just had lunch, so maybe we're not all so hungry. But you've probably heard of the famous marshmallow test. So if I could somehow send you all like a virtual marshmallow, what I would do is give you the option of eating one marshmallow now or two marshmallows at the end of the webinar in just under an hour's time. So you've probably heard of the famous marshmallow test, right? So the original study was done, I think it was at Stanford University, wasn't it? It was done with kids, and kids were given the opportunity of eating one marshmallow now, and it was placed on a table in front of them, so it was really tempting. Or if they could wait, I think it was about 20 minutes or something, then they'd get two marshmallows at the end. And only about one third of the children were able to successfully wait. But then they followed up those kids later, and they found that the kids who were able to resist the temptation in order to get the two marshmallows later went on to do better in school. They were less likely to get into crime, to start drinking, taking drugs, and so on. But only about a third of the kids, as I said, could wait. So this is a problem that at Endless Gain we encounter quite a lot with a lot of our various different clients. So, for example, one big client that we are still working with actually is a selling website. And the problem that we had with this site is that people who were selling on this site had to pay, and I think it was around $100 roughly up front. And of course, they were going to get, once they sold their goods, much more than that later. But the trouble is that they're spending the money now and getting the money later. So this is a kind of negative delay discounting. They're taking the pain of paying out now and discounting the fact that they're going to get much more money back later. So one of the solutions that we're still, we haven't gone live with this yet, but we're still exploring this solution, is possibly to take the credit card details now, but then say that you pay only when your item sells. So trying to postpone that kind of financial hit and bring sooner, kind of mentally, the actual getting the money. But it doesn't just have to be with a rather specific example of a selling website. If your site is more standard e-commerce, just a standard kind of selling site, it might be worth experimenting with some kind of buy now, pay later. The pain of paying out this money is going to be reduced. It's going to be discounted if this can be pushed back in time. Well, I like to illustrate it with my own book, but the first study I think that did this was a study with coffee mugs. So it was a psychology experiment, and people came in and they were given a nice they were given a choice actually. They could either have $3 or they could have the mug. And you know, it was about 50-50. People liked the mug, but they didn't go crazy for it. Some chose the mug, some chose the $3, and you know, they were all happy. But the people who'd chosen the mug then wouldn't sell it back to the experimenter for less than around $6 on average. So this is why I said about $6 or £6 was the expected value for mine. Once you've already got something, you seem to want roughly twice its value before you're prepared to part with it. So this raises the question of what exactly causes this endowment effect. And this was investigated in another study, which was conducted at the University of Basel in Switzerland. So in this one, it was very similar, except rather than a mug, people were given lottery tickets. And again, people could, some people were given lottery tickets, some people were just given cash. And then they looked to see if people would sell the lottery tickets back. And what they found is that people who were given the lottery tickets looked for reasons not to sell them. They looked for reasons to keep them. They thought, well, I'd better not sell them, because if this number came up a winner, then I'd really regret it. Whereas people who were just given cash and given the opportunity to buy lottery tickets tended not to do so. They looked for reasons not to have them. So this shows what causes the endowment effect. If you do have something, then you're looking for reasons not to part with it rather than reasons to part with it. So how could this work for your site? It's not always so straightforward, because normally the customer who's coming to your site doesn't actually have the thing that you're selling yet. You need to somehow create that feeling in them that they do have it and that they don't want to lose it. So this, of course, is why free trials are so popular. So we've got obviously Amazon Prime here, or Microsoft Office 365. So the idea here is that they, obviously once they've given people the trial, they've already got the service or the product, they're going to find it difficult to give up later. Once they've already got it, then it's going to make the service seem more valuable to them. They're more likely to want to hold on to it, less willing to give it up than they would be if they just had to pay out for it in the first place. So how could this work for your site? It depends exactly what your site is selling. You need a way to make the customers feel they already have the product and they don't want to lose it. So you could try a free trial. You could maybe, if they're buying something, you could bundle on something that they later would have to pay a fee to keep. Or just the free trial can work very successfully. It was very successful for us with some work we did for virus software for a big IT security company. It can also work the other way, of course. You remember that I mentioned a few minutes ago that we did some work for a company that did a selling website, and we had to try and come up with solutions for people looked for reasons. Endowment says that people are going to look for reasons not to sell their goods that are sold on this particular site. So there, you have to try and find a way to overcome the endowment effect if it's a selling website, or try to get a way to create the endowment effect if it's a more conventional e-commerce buying website. So how could this work for you? Well, of course, you have to play this very carefully. And of course, like with all of these psychological phenomena, it's very important that you run your own tests because it can be very specific on a site-by-site basis what's going to work and what's not going to work so well. You certainly don't want to alienate people. But if you have various add-ons or upgrade options, you could try at least not offering them until people have already paid out some money. So it was quite hard to find an example of that. So this isn't really what I'm talking about here on the game one. So this is the way that it tends to be, is that people have got the basket and then it's suggesting add-ons. What the sunk cost phenomenon suggests is that it might actually be better to get people to pay out the money and only then give them the options of adding various add-ons. I guess it kind of depends on what the add-on is, whether it's something that's if it's something that's kind of more essential than people, or you can create that feeling that it's more essential for enjoying the product, then even after people have already paid out some money, they then might be willing to add on an extra that they feel they need to get the most out of that cost they've already sunk. And they might be more willing, or at least the sunk cost theory says, they would be more willing to do that add-on after they'd already paid out the money for the initial purchase rather than just getting the choice to add it to the basket before they check out here. Another thing to mention is that not all sunk costs are financial. So effort can also be a sunk cost. So, excuse me. So a lot of sites are going to require a sign-in at some point. But the question is, when? So a lot of sites, like we've got here, compare the market. So this is an insurance site. So a lot of these sites will get people to sign in. So here it's, this is car insurance. You have to put in your car details right at the start in this site. So a lot of sites do it this way. But again, sunk cost theory says that this isn't always necessarily going to be the best way to do it. It might be good to get people to do kind of a lot of work. So imagine, I mean, I know supermarket websites are all, have all been affected at the moment, but it could be good to get people to put in a lot of work, filling up the basket with loads of products, and then get them to sign in so they don't waste all the effort they've done putting together their big shop or their big customization or whatever they're doing, rather than getting them to do it at the start. So in most city centres, I don't know what it's like where you are, but in most city centres in the UK, certainly in Manchester, we have these people that are kind of jokingly called chuggers or charity muggers. So what their job is to try and get you to sign up for a direct debit to give money to charity. So how do they do it? They then come up to you, of course, and say, would you like to sign up to give £30 a month in a direct debit? They start with something very small. They say, often they just say, could you spare a minute to answer a couple of questions? Because of course, you know, we can all spare a minute, or most of us can. And only then do they escalate it. And after they've built up a bit of a rapport and you've agreed to a lot of small requests, they then try to get you to sign up for the direct debit. So this is the foot in the door technique. If you grant someone a small request at the start, then you're much more likely to agree to a bigger request later. So this was first documented as a phenomenon at the Stanford University Business School. So researchers phoned up houses in the local town, Palo Alto, and asked, would it be okay for a team of 5 to 6 men to come to your house for 2 hours and go through all your cupboards and catalogue the products that you've got in them for a market research survey? So, of course, when they did that, nearly everyone they phoned up told them in no uncertain terms to get lost. There was no way they were going to agree to such an invasive survey. But then they thought, right, we're going to try a foot-in-the-door version. So first, after phoning people up, they asked them to complete a very simple 8-question market research survey over the phone. And nearly everyone agreed to that. It only took a few minutes. But then once they'd done that, the researchers said, oh, well, thank you very much. That was very useful. But what would be even better would be if you agree for a team of 5 to 6 men to come through your house, to go through all your cupboards and so on. And in this foot in the door version, over half of the people who were phoned up agreed to this pretty huge, really, request, as compared to under 20% of people who hadn't had the foot in the door technique. So this is kind of similar to the sunk cost in a way, except sunk cost is about, it works best if you get someone to sink in some big cost. Foot in the door is about getting people to agree to something small or to put up a small amount of money. And then once you've got them in with that, to then increase the price of what's being asked for. So here's an example for how Microsoft do this. So this is with the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. So you can see, they've done something very interesting. So rather than the, we saw a little while ago with, well, it was Microsoft again, wasn't it, with Office, but also with Amazon Prime, we saw that one popular option is to give a free trial for, let's say, 1 month or 3 months. But then what they've decided here with the Xbox Game Pass is to get people to on a subscription where they pay $1 a month for the first 3 months rather than nothing. So why have they done that? It's not like Microsoft need that $1 off everyone. It's not like that's going to make any difference financially, really. The reason they've done it, I assume, they must have decided that this, rather than Office, this is the type of thing where the foot-in-the-door technique is going to work better. once you've got into the habit of, or, you know, set up your direct debit in such a way that you're quite happy to pay Microsoft $1 a month for the Xbox Pass, then you're going to then agree when the request comes in after the 3 months to pay the $45 quarterly. On the other hand, the foot in the door technique needs to be balanced with an opposite technique called the door in the face technique. So the idea here is that rather than giving people a tiny request and then upgrading it to a bigger request or a bigger purchase later, you start off with a huge and frankly quite unreasonable request with the idea that people will agree to a smaller request later, kind of out of relief, as much as anything. So in the original Caldini study, what they originally did was ask participants, how would you feel about taking a group of juvenile delinquents on a day trip to the zoo? And unsurprisingly, everyone said, God, no, that sounds like an absolute nightmare. So then they said, okay, well, if you can't do that, how about just acting as a guidance counselor to small groups of kids just for a couple of hours? And most people were so relieved to be given this easier option, they then agreed to do this. Whereas if you just ask people cold, would you like to sign up to be a guidance counselor for 2 hours, then most people weren't too keen to do that. So how could this work for your site? So this is a donation website, and I'm not sure if it always defaults to, I think mostly it defaults to the lower amounts, but it's just an example of how it could work. So imagine you, one way it could work is to have the initial request to be a huge donation, more than almost anyone is realistically going to give. And then the idea here is that if you defaulted to the $500 donation, then people could be more likely to give any donation at all rather than nothing, or perhaps to give one of the medium-sized donations rather than the small one. So whether the foot in the door or door in the face technique is going to work best for your site really depends on what you're selling and who you think your customers are. So there was a study that actually compared different personality types to see who responds best to foot in the door and door in the face. And it showed that most people respond better to foot in the door, but there was a small subgroup of people who responded better to the door in the face version. And these were people who were kind of outgoing thrill seeker types. So I think we're not quite at the stage where you're going to be able to, you know, do a personality of your personality profile of your customers off their clicks and so on. But if your site is the type where you think it's mostly going to get these kind of risk-seeking customers, so if you're a gambling website, say, or a site that sells extreme sports experiences, if you have that type of customer, then it could well be the case that a door in the face strategy is going to work better than foot in the door for you. If not, then foot in the door is probably the way to go. So this was shown in a famous study, again, with mugs. Not sure whether it was used mugs, but it was done by a professor called Christopher C. at the University of Chicago Business School. And he found that participants were prepared to pay more for a box of 12 pristine coffee mugs than they were for a box of 20 mugs that had 5 broken ones and 5 pristine ones. So in other words, people were prepared to pay more for 12 mugs than for 15 mugs, just because they didn't like the extra 5 mugs, broken mugs, being in the box. So why do we get these less is more effects, or the less is more fallacy? If we go back to the burger example, if you're asked to judge how many calories we're getting here, you kind of mentally average over the burger, the water, and the celery. And this mental averaging brings somehow the overall perception of the amount of calories down as compared to if you just show one high calorie item. It's the same with the mugs. If you see 12 mugs, 12 brand new mugs, you think, yeah, that's great. If you see 15 brand new mugs and 5 broken mugs, then averaging across them, how good is this box of mugs as a whole? It doesn't seem so great on average. So you think it's less good than a box of just 12 pristine mugs. So how could this work for your site? So the lesson for your site is that adding on free extras that don't seem of particularly high value to the customer, you know, even if they are good value, if they don't seem good value to the customer, adding on extras that aren't so great could make the offering seem worse rather than better. Because when they average across, you know, the great product that they want and the cheap freebie that they didn't want, the overall quality of the package seems worse. So here's an example from a real site. Again, I'm not going to say which, but so the difference between the standard and basic package on this site, or the main difference at least, is this, as you can see here, standout, show up to 8 photos in search results. It turns out that this is actually a good benefit. It is worth paying for that. But do customers see that value? If they don't, then they're going to think that the standard package seems worse value than the basic package. It doesn't seem, yeah, you're getting less is more here. So the standard service plus this 8 photos thing, which they don't think is very good, averaging across that doesn't seem so great. They kind of feel like they'd be better off with the basic package. You can see that this max plan, they're not really expecting anyone to go for this max plan. They're just trying to shift your frame of reference of what is a reasonable amount to pay for their service. So once you've kind of got in your head that around $200 is what some people are paying, then the idea is that this $49 package is supposed to seem kind of reasonable, and you're supposed to go for this rather than the very basic package. So this is kind of combining anchoring with a decoy, but for a kind of pure anchoring, it doesn't have to work like this with a decoy. The idea is if you can just get a big number in front of people, it could make the price of the goods that you're selling on your site seem smaller by comparison. So this is the way it worked with the capacity of the football stadium and the height of Mount Everest. Obviously, they're completely unrelated, but you still get the effect, even though people know that they're unrelated. So if you can get a big number in front of the customer just before they see the price, then you could get an anchoring effect that works to your benefit here. So it could just be something like your street address, if that's a high number. It could be fun facts related to your product. So how many products you sold last year, or say you, just making one up, say you sell shirts, you could say the average shirt has so many thousand pieces of cotton in it or something. The point is just that if you can get a big number in front of the customer, it can make other numbers like prices seem smaller by comparison. So the next one is framing. So would you walk for an hour if someone offers to pay you $20? Maybe, maybe not. Would you pay $20 to someone else to do an hour-long errand for you? Okay. So now think about it this way. Would you walk to the shops and back, this is an hour-long round trip, to save $20 on a product that normally costs $50? So if you're interested in the product, you could get it delivered to your door for $50 on Amazon. Would you take an hour-long round trip to the shops to save $20 and get it for just $30? Now imagine the same thing, but the product that you're going to buy is like a fancy new computer or something, and it costs $5,000 to deliver to your door. Would you save $20 and walk to the shops if you can get it for $4,980? So most people have very different answers to these questions. So most people, the first two are maybe kind of more of a personal thing, but the last two, certainly, most people say that they would walk to the shops and back to save $20 on the $50 product, but that they wouldn't to save $20 on the $5,000 product. And in a way, we can kind of see the logic here. It's a big percentage of the $50, but it's a very small percentage of the $5,000. But then when you combine them with the other two, you can see that we're really asking the same thing here. We're saying, is it worth $20 to you to do an hour-long errand, to do an hour-long walk to the shops? And in a sense, it shouldn't matter whether how we're framing it. These are four different ways of framing the same question. Would you do an hour's walk? Is an hour's walking worth $20 to you? It doesn't really make sense that it is in some cases, but it isn't in another. It's all just about framing. So how can this work for your site? The point for your site is that the same deal financially can be perceived very differently if it's losing a certain amount of money versus failing to gain a certain amount of money, or compared to the base price of the product. So for example, it might be better to have the basic price $5 higher, but to offer so-called free delivery, rather than to have it $5 cheaper, but then charge £5 for the shipping. So here's an example from eBay. This is a made-up example, but it just goes to show the point. So you'll see this yourself on eBay and various types of selling sites. So it takes only a tiny bit of mental math to work out that the second one is cheaper here. But is it a good way to, if people pay less attention to the postage, it could be a good way to draw in the customers to have a kind of to frame it to have a cheaper buy it now price and then add on the postage than to have a more expensive headline price here. Okay, so odd one out here. Which of these photos is the odd one out? So we've got a teddy from the Build-A-Bear workshop. We've got pick your own strawberries. We've got a Betty Crocker cake mix and an armchair from Oak Furniture Land. So let's see. Anyone in the questions here want to have a guess which is the odd one out? Are you getting any guesses?
Yep. So a lot of people seem to think it's the armchair, which is the different one. But my pick would be the strawberries.
It is the armchair. And the reason it's the armchair is that probably people around the world don't really know what Oak Furniture Land is. But this is an armchair that's ready-made, whereas the other ones, you have to do some work yourself. You have to build the bear. You have to pick your own strawberries. You have to make your own cake here. So that's the wrong one highlighted here. I don't know why that one's come up. It's actually the armchair from Oak Furniture Land. So this is the labor love effect, or the IKEA effect, which is that you value something when you have to work more for it. So you don't value the chair so much because you didn't have to do any work to get it. You value something more when you've had to put some work in. I know the couple here don't look like they're particularly having a great time doing their self-assembly furniture, but the labor love effect, or the IKEA effect, says that nevertheless, once they've assembled it, they'll appreciate it more than if they'd just got it ready made. So this is a version of some work we did for a fashion retailer, Misguided, and we tried it different colors. And actually, I think it was animated in the end, was the way that it stood out. But having just one product that is different from all the rest, whether it's visually or whatever, the one that's different is the one that you remember. So this is a great way to drive customers towards a particular product on your site.
Thank you, Professor Ambridge, for these wonderful insights on how to use psychological intelligence to optimize user experience. And thank you, folks, for sticking with us throughout this episode. Now, it's your turn to take action. Implement these game-changing strategies and let us know what impact it had on your business. Also, share this episode with anyone who could benefit from these insights, and don't forget to check out the other fascinating conversations that we've had with industry experts. Before you go, make sure to hit that follow button so that you don't miss a single episode of VWO Podcast. That's a wrap from our side. Until next time, goodbye, take care, and always be testing.